Blog Talk Radio.
Attention, Army Wives, fall in. You've come to the right place. Army Wife Talk Radio is the leading and longest running podcast of its kind, providing the latest reports, stories, interviews, and more to encourage and empower you on your military spouse journey. For Army Wives, by Army Wives. Now, here are your hosts, the Army Wife Network core team.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Debbie Cunningham, and today is Monday, May 13th, 2019, and this is show 691. AWTR is the leading and longest running podcast of its kind. We have two exciting guests for you this evening. Ashley Biuji will share her story of tragedy and perseverance. She'll be on the line with us in just a few minutes. And during the second half of the show, Lieutenant Colonel David Richardson will discuss his first novel, War Story.
I'm your co-host, Caroline Schaefer. Also tonight, we have some exciting news to share. AWN is teaming up with the VA to discuss how VHA is using mental health apps and telemental offerings to increase access to care for veterans. We'll tell you more about this important Facebook Live event that we're going to have coming up at the end of May after our chat with Ashley.
If you're listening to our show live right now, we're hanging out on Twitter and would love to chat with you. Tweet us at Army Wife Network and use the hashtag ArmyWife to participate in the conversation. Links to all the resources we mentioned tonight will be posted in our Twitter feed and in the comments section below the show post on our Facebook page, as well as below this podcast on blogtalkradio.com.
And tonight's show is brought to you by our AWTR show sponsor, One Natural Way. Every expecting mom is busy preparing for baby, but military moms often face unique challenges all their own. That's why One Natural Way specializes in making it easy for military families to get a breast pump and breastfeeding supplies, as well as personalized support. Only One Natural Way can offer no upgrade fee on any Medela or Spectra breast pump, a customizable monthly supply program, and free lactation consultations to ensure breastfeeding success. One Natural Way has helped thousands of military families throughout their breastfeeding journey. See how they can help you by visiting their website, www.onenaturalway.com, to get started today.
So, Caroline, let's do some catching up before we move on with the show. Let's talk about what's happening in your Army Wife life.
Okay. I just got back from Disney, and
fine.
I can't stop singing Disney songs in my head. I went down there for something that was a military appreciation weekend down at Westgate Resort, and we'll have more information probably in the future about the specifics of how that went down and how and all that stuff. But it was only for three days, and I looked at my husband and I said, okay, we can't drive 8 hours to only go to Orlando for 2.5-3 days. You have to go for a week, and we have to go to Disney. I mean, that's, you can't not go to Disney if you're in Orlando. That doesn't even make any sense. So we drove down a week ago Saturday, and it happened to be my birthday week too. So it was
perfect.
I had a phenomenal time. Yeah, it was so much fun. And I love my, I mean, I don't ride a lot of rides. And I do love about Disney that they have the slow ones. So if you're not like a big ride person, but you want something still to go look at, they have like for every age. But the fireworks and the stuff they do on the castle, I could just cry thinking about it. I loved it
yes.
so much. I loved it.
Yes, because we
it was
just
so much
went
fun.
A couple weeks ago. We went a couple weeks ago also, and same thing.
Yep.
That was so amazing. And I had gone like 10 years prior, I think, and it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
And it was
really
so powerful to watch.
Mm-hmm. Did you stay for, so did you watch the first one and then stay for the second one? Because I don't think a lot of people, I mean, maybe they, we didn't know when we went last year that there was another, you know, where Mrs. Potts reads to Chip, or I shouldn't really read to him, but they tell more the bedtime stories. Did you stay for both of those?
No, are they back to back?
One, the one starts at 8 and the next one starts at 9. Yeah.
Okay. So I stayed for the, I saw the 9 o'clock one. I saw the 9 o'clock.
Oh, okay. Okay. Or, yeah. It was great. Well, maybe it's 9 and 10. I don't know. But there are two. And it's so worth it. It's, oh my goodness. I recorded part of it, of course, you know, from, and I've been watching it. In fact, we watched Up this afternoon. I had, I'm like, what Disney movie can I, yeah, I'm just randomly going around. So if I break into song tonight, just ignore me.
That's okay. We got back, because we did 4 days at Disney, and, you know, when we got back, it was, we're going to watch all the Disney movies now again. Because
mm-hmm.
we were so excited and had such a great time. And I mean, you can't, I don't know how anybody could go down there and not have fun. You just
yeah,
have a great time
yeah.
and you're just happy.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's true. Even though it's hot. But it's like you forget how hot it is. Because I know it was hot, but I didn't pay attention while I was at Disney. No. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Well, so that's what I did
no.
last week. What did you do last week?
I did do Disney last week, that's for sure.
No,
I'm still at the end of my semester, so I'm just in school book mode right now until this week. And then my daughter graduates too in high school at
Aww.
The end of this month. So
wow.
just a lot of changes going on. So and she's the last of the kiddos to graduate high school. And I haven't wrapped my head around it, so I'm not really talking about it. I'll probably talk
okay.
about it when it happens. But yeah, I know it's a big change, and I'm super excited. And as a parent, this is what, you know, this is what we do. We go through these stages and these transitions and stuff, and this is another big one. But she's the last one and the baby, and so, again,
mm-hmm.
I'm just not coming to terms with it yet.
right.
But, but it's... But that's what we do as parents, right? Aren't we supposed to go through this with them and be not be ready, then be ready, or just deal with it with all the big changes in our
that's
lives?
That's true.
Because you've done that, right?
Well, okay, so I'm not going to cry. I say that, but I don't know why I always, when you talk about the youngest, like, oh my goodness. Yeah, we took David, so the youngest, who also turned 21 a week ago, well, 2 weeks ago. So he went
okay.
with us, and I was
okay.
fine all week. I was totally fine. He did a lot of stuff with my husband. You know, I got the Star Wars guided tour just for the two of them on Wednesday. So
nice.
I had the entire day to myself. That was for them. I just like them to believe that it was for them. No, it really was for them. But, yesterday when he left, I sat in the other room and cried for like an hour. And I don't know. I just cried. I just let myself cry. Okay. I didn't cry right now. So that's good. That's good. We're good. Yeah.
So we're not going to have any tears, and we're going to go switch over to bringing our first guest on this evening so we don't
okay.
both break down crying.
I love that idea. Ashley sounds like a fun person to talk to. She's probably got some good advice for us anyways. And how to get through this.
Yes.
All right.
So
let's laugh at Ashley.
Yeah. There she is. Ashley Bougie. No, wait, Bougie. I'm going to call her Ashley. I'm just going to call her Ashley. So Ashley
Honestly,
is 6 months
all,
pregnant.
I've heard all answered anything.
I can't imagine. I bet you have. But okay. So let me see this here. You were 6 months pregnant with your third child. So I'm not going to cry. When you received a phone call that would forever change the path of your life, Ashley, and so that you were getting ready to have the third child, your third child, and your other two were all under the age of 5, and your husband was stationed at, you guys were at Pearl Harbor, and he died in a tragic scuba diving accident. Wow.
And, yeah, and then,
yeah.
so it's, you've spent the last spent 11 months since his death rebuilding his own rebuilding your own life, leaving their home, your home in Hawaii, giving birth to your baby, writing a book, starting a scholarship foundation to honor his memory, and now raising three children under five on your own. Welcome to the show, Ashley.
Well, thank you so much. And no need to cry. I've done enough of that for all of us. But I am kind of laughing as you're talking about these stages because I'm literally sitting in my car right now hiding from my three children because I tried the closet and they found me. So now I'm out in the car so that I have some quiet time for this call. So that's the stage that I'm at with my kids.
Well, thank you for taking the time to join us this evening. If you can, take a moment to introduce yourself. And we understand that you were prior military other than a spouse. So can you tell us about that?
So I was actually not prior military. I was a military spouse, though. And
I read it wrong. My apologies.
No, that's okay. Through being a military spouse, my years of being a military spouse, I can tell you it taught me very well that I would not personally do well in the military. But I was a great military spouse. I can support it from that level. I'm a mom. I'm a writer now. I'm a graduate student. I'm a traveler. I'm an avid Scrabble player, hiker, outdoor enthusiast. Kind of a little bit of everything, but now I'm just fiercely determined and motivated above all else to be a good mom and to keep the memory and the legacy that my husband built alive. It's my main motivation these days.
Very motivating, for sure. I mean, you're doing quite a bit with three kiddos under five, and you got a lot going on. So just to backtrack, we can get a good foundation about what we're going to talk about. Can you tell us about Brian and his passing and your unique relationship?
Yeah, so Brian and I originally dated. I was 20, he was 21 years old. We came together and it was kind of the right person at the wrong time situation. We were both very young. He was ready to join the Navy, get married, have babies, and kind of see where the Navy took us. And I was not ready for any of that. I was ready to be 20 years old and travel and kind of do my own thing. And so he jokingly, not so jokingly, honestly, just always said I broke his heart that time I broke up with him when we were 20. But fast forward 8 years later and circumstances came to be that we were able to get back together and it was the right person now at the right time. And we spent the next 5.5 years just building this incredible life together. We had three babies. We had two babies, I guess, and then I had the third without him. But we spent our time, adventuring. He sailed our boat across the Pacific Ocean on a PCS move. We traveled the world with our kids. We, went scuba diving all over. We just had this really incredible, fun, romantic, adventurous life together. We really made the most of every single moment that we had, even across oceans from one another. He worked on submarines in the Navy, and we spent more time apart than we ever did together. But the love was there, and the desire and the want to be together was there, and so we made it work, and we thrived. And he was just a really incredible human being.
That sounds like almost like we were talking earlier about Disney, so like fairy tale-ish, get together, broke up, and then get back together, and it's fabulous, and doing all these wonderful things. So can you talk to me about what's life been like since his death?
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind, I can tell you that. We were living this dream life. It was a fairy tale. We talked about it all the time, like how cool that we get to live this dream life together. We get to experience love like this and adventure like this together. And then the Navy was going to move us to Hawaii and we would get to continue to build our life in this playground of a destination. We loved it. We were so excited. And we spent almost a year there together before he passed away in a scuba diving accident. And I got the call. I was 6 months pregnant. I got the call. I rushed to the ER to find out that he didn't make it. And within the next few days, I was planning a funeral for the love of my life. I was planning a second birthday party for my son, who turned 2 10 days after his death. I was planning a PCS now off the island because I was under time constraints to have the baby. If I waited much longer, I would have to have her on the island and stay there for the next few months, and I couldn't bring myself to do that. So that meant I was quickly planning a PCS off the island and trying to figure out where to go. And it's kind of led up to where I am now, which is writing a book about our life together so that my kids understand who their dad was and understand where they came from and why we wanted them so bad. It was starting this scholarship foundation in his name so that other people can experience and enjoy scuba diving the way that he did and all that it brought to his life and our life. And just busy, very busy with 3 kids now. I've got, my daughter's now 9 months old. I've got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. So I've got a lot going on.
Ashley, that's incredible. And you said no crying, so I'm not crying. But I'm taking in everything that you said. See, the one-year mark is approaching, and it sounds like you're someone who's a planner. So do you have anything planned in his memory?
I do. So as soon as we left the island, leaving the island was the best and the worst, honestly, the best and the worst experience. I knew I couldn't stay there to have our daughter. I was devastated, doesn't even begin to explain how I felt. But I knew leaving that it would always feel like home, a piece of home for us, and that I wanted my kids to know Hawaii and understand why we lived our lives the way that we did there. And so it's ever since we left, it's been kind of a countdown to when we're going to come back, which is now going to be this year milestone. And to commemorate it, I've put together a memorial dive for my husband. I'm having basically a dive boat go out with 12 military veterans, dive buddies of his that are coming in from across the country to participate in this memorial dive. I've actually just decided to participate in it myself. I've been anxiously making this decision to do it, but have decided that I think I would regret not participating in the dive myself. So on May 19th, we'll be doing a memorial dive on the wreck that he passed away on, and just kind of all saying our own goodbyes underwater in the last place that he was, and in a way that all makes sense to us, something that we can all take away from it.
Sure. That's a pretty magnificent, and I'm sure it will be very memorable. And it sounds
Wow.
So my question is, what are you doing to keep his memory alive? You definitely have things that you're doing as part of your, getting through it. How would you, but there's kind of 2 questions in there, I suppose. What are you doing to keep his memory alive? And is all the steps and the things that you're doing, is that helping you with the grieving process and helping you not just survive, but thrive while you're raising these little ones and taking care of yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's all coming honestly from a selfish place. I don't want to stop hearing his name. I don't want people to stop talking about him and thinking about him and promoting the way that he lived his life. His whole motto was no bucket list. Like, live like there's no tomorrow, because tomorrow's not guaranteed. And it's very important to me that I keep that memory and that theory and that logic alive. And so all of these things that I'm doing are because I can't stomach the thought of not hearing the sound of his name being said anymore, and the thought of his kids not knowing just how incredible he was and the man that he was and the vision that he saw for his life and for their lives. And yeah, all of these things are really, I'm doing just so that I can keep talking about him and promoting this life and this vision that we had and we wanted together.
So life truly is still an adventure.
Absolutely. And yeah, you know, I'm doing these things. I finished my manuscript this last week, and I was in tears. The last chapter is all about his passing away, and as soon as I finished it, you know, I'm bawling, I'm devastated, I'm reliving these memories of saying my goodbye to him. But I close my eyes, I hear him just saying, "That is so damn cool. I'm so proud of you. Oh my gosh, you did it. This is the coolest thing. You're going to take this so far." And just hearing him encouraging me and motivating me, just as he's always done. And I firmly believe that as long as I keep doing these things, that I'm going to keep promoting the way that we wanted to live our lives, and that I feel still encouraged and supported and empowered by him to make these things happen for our family.
That's so great. So what, I know you said you're getting ready to travel to commemorate the dates, but what else is next for you? Because you love to travel. You guys love to travel.
Yeah. So we're heading to Hawaii later this week to do the 1-year memorial. And then right after he passed away, travel's always been a way of life for us as well. We've taken our kids since they were 5 months old. My son went to Portugal for the first time with us. So international travel has just been a way of life for us. And I was honestly very worried that I'd have to give up, or I just would give up. I wouldn't have the confidence to continue doing things that I've always loved and that have been a part of our family like that. So pretty early on, as soon as I had our daughter, I decided to plan a summer-long trip to Europe. And I just thought, what's the craziest thing that I can do to push myself and to set a goal and to give myself some confidence that I can continue to do this? And it ended up being this 2.5-month trip through 7 countries of Europe that I'm going to bring my 3 kids on, and we're just going to go heal and make new memories as a family, and I'm going to write about it, and it's just going to be a really hard but incredible experience for us to be able to do and really just think about him and what he provided for us, and just like I said, making new memories as a family.
Oh, that's so great. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I know, I'm sure Debbie would agree with me, we could talk to you for hours. Of course, you're hiding from your children.
Yeah.
But we definitely, we'd love to hear how your we'd love to hear how your summer trip goes. So we'll definitely have to reconnect again. But thank you so much for joining us and sharing such a hopeful and just an encouraging story. Thank you so much.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
You can connect with Ashley by going to Facebook at Ashley, B-U-G-G-E-X-O, Instagram at ashley.bugge, or website www.ashleybugge.com.
Well, it is public service announcement time. So, listeners, do you or your business have a military-related PSA? We do have a limit of 1 per show, and we ask for them about 10 days in advance. And you can submit your PSA by emailing them to info@armywifenetwork.com. So coming up, Army Wife Network and the VA will present, by coming up, I mean it's May 22nd, not right now, but the VA Mental Health Tools and Technologies to Think About During Mental Health Month. Join the VA's Office of Connected Care and Army Wife Network at 12 o'clock p.m. Eastern on May 22nd, 2019, for discussion on mental health apps and telemental offerings. This event will feature technologies, including Captain Coach, mindfulness coach, Annie VVC, and others. During the Facebook Live event, our experts, Crystal Niehoff, president of Army Wife Network, I'm also president, friend, great person, Dr. David Carroll, executive director, VA Mental Health Operations, and Dr. Christina Armstrong, clinical psychologist, Connected Health Implementation Strategies. We'll discuss how these technologies are helping to deliver care when and where it is needed. The experts will also answer audience questions submitted through the chat feature during this event. If you would like to learn more about the Office of Connected Care's continued efforts to increase veterans' access to care through the VA's Connected Health Technologies, visit connectedcare.va.gov. And to watch the Facebook Live event, visit Army Wife Network's Facebook page on May 22, 2019, from 12 to 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And just actually, I've already set my reminder on my calendar, so just go ahead and mark it and have that little smartphone send you a reminder, because this is such an important topic. So that's it for our PSA. Up next, Lieutenant Colonel David Richardson joins us to discuss his first novel, War Story. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, I'm Christina Applegate. When someone you know is diagnosed with cancer, it can leave you speechless. When you don't know what to say, there are real ways you can stand up and show that you care. Listen without judgment or giving advice. Be specific about how you can help, like delivering a meal or babysitting. Educate yourself about the diagnosis. When you understand what a patient is going through, you're better able to help. Visit showthatyoucare.org to learn more about how you can stand up for someone that you love.
Do you have a product or service to offer our listeners? Reach thousands of military families worldwide via Army Wife Network. ArmyWifeNetwork.com has a limited number of sponsorship opportunities available. Visit ArmyWifeNetwork.com/sponsorship or email us at info@ArmyWifeNetwork.com for details.
Welcome back to Army Wife Talk Radio. I'm Debbie Cunningham.
And I'm Caroline Schaefer. Joining us now is Lieutenant Colonel David Richardson. David is from Waterford, Michigan. And from an early age, he was taught to draw and paint by his mother, an artist, and an art teacher.
David served as a combat arms officer and martial arts instructor for 22 years in the United States Marine Corps, later retiring to paint and write. He was awarded for valor Bronze Star with V Device during combat operations in Anbar Province, Iraq, and served three tours in the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Africa. War Story is his first novel. Welcome to the show, David.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We're very excited to be speaking with you tonight. Would you take a moment to introduce yourself and tell us about your military career?
Yeah, so I'm Dave Richardson, as you mentioned. I'm retired now, and I spent 22 years in the Marine Corps. I was an artillery officer, and I also, as you mentioned, I was a martial arts instructor. I spent time in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, Camp Pendleton, California, Okinawa, Japan, Korea, a bunch of other places, and I also did a couple tours in the war in Afghanistan, Iraq, and East Africa. And like I said, I got out in 2013. I'm raising two boys, and I work for the Department of Homeland Security now, and I write and I paint. So that's kind of the summary.
Well, that's a big summary. Sounds like you have a lot. You've done a lot and still kind of busy. So can you tell us what inspired you to join the Marine Corps?
So I come from a family of people who served in the military, World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. I remember when I was a little boy, there was a lot of talk about it, and I didn't intend to actually join. After college, I was accepted to a professional school, but I declined, and I joined, in retrospect, to essentially answer the question I answered in the book. Of course, I didn't know I was asking the question back then. I just want to know what all the fuss was about, because I listened to the stories and I saw how much my uncles and my father, the camaraderie they got from it, and I was curious of what it was about. So that's kind of why I joined the Marine Corps. And then the curiosity carried right on through the war and throughout as I retired. And then I essentially wrote a book. So I will tell you, I joined the Marine Corps because I wondered why man was fascinated by particularly warfare. And it took me a long time to figure it out, but I think I figured it out and I included it in the book.
Well, that's kind of interesting. So was it hard? What did it take to get you to figure it out? Was it one thing that hit you, or was it multiple things that you put together?
I was running to that. I was actually thinking about that. How did I put that together in the end? I think we all have questions in our lives. And I don't mean this to be, overstatement that we kind of seek to answer. And I think we answer them in increments. And then at some point you realize, I've answered the question. And I will tell you with mine, I answered the question as I wrote the book. I think the answer was there, but it took some focused thinking, like writing a novel or a memoir, to draw it out. And once I began articulating, I refined the answer until it satisfied me. And it satisfies me. I'll leave it up to the reader to see if my answer satisfies or answers the question, why is man fascinated by war?
Interesting. So you've got all this experience and focusing on, why about the war. You're an artist. What inspired you to become an artist? Because that's kind of like completely different, in my opinion. Or is it all together because it's about creating?
No, go ahead.
Oh, no. I'm just saying, were you inspired because it's about creating, like you were putting your book together? Are you just a creative mind kind of person, or?
No, my mother was the creative one, and my brother. And growing up, I watched my mother paint, and she was a painter. And she painted all the time, and she took her paintings to art fairs and things like that. And she also, there was somewhere in the house, there was a manuscript of a book. And we don't know what happened to it, but apparently she had written a book that she never got published. But so she was an artist, and it was definitely part of her life. It wasn't something she kind of did on the side. She did it all the time, despite the fact that she had six kids. And I watched her do that, and I also watched my brother do the same thing. My brother's a painter. He lives in Germany, and he paints as well. So I don't know if I was inspired to paint as much as it was something that we did in our house. And so I did it. I heard John Mellencamp, because he's a painter as well, besides a singer, and he essentially said the same thing. I've never not painted, and it was something that they just did in their household, and it's something I carried on even after I joined the Marine Corps. It was a bit odd at times, but I never found the two things opposed, being a Marine or being a painter. I think because I grew up around both things. I grew up around a family that had been in the military, and then I grew up in a family that painted and played the piano and played the guitar and did all those artistic things.
So, David, how is your service inspired your art and writing? I did see on your website that you had the Expatriate series and the Trojan War series, which were both inspired by when you were living in Seoul. Did I get that right?
That's correct.
Yes. And they were, my father was an artist and my grandfather was a Marine. And he was, matter of fact, he was one of the first aides to General Chessie Fuller. So, I have a picture of them together, but so he's not alive anymore. But I always like to tell Marines that because I feel like it gives me some kind, brownie points or something. But
I'll put it on the sheet. It's Jesse Fuller. You cannot get Donnie.
It is. I know. My father was an artist, and it's interesting because being raised by a Marine back then, it was a little different than today, where it sounds like you have that kind of creativity freedom. So how did, and you kind of touched on it a minute ago, but how has your service really, has it truly inspired your art and writing? Besides, you know, like the places you've gone and things like that.
I think I'll answer it like this. the painting has been my photography. So a lot of folks carry around a camera and they take pictures wherever they go. And then in the end, they have hundreds of photographs, maybe thousands of photographs, and they put them together in a notebook, and it's fantastic. I have a little bit of that, not as much as I would like, by the way. But what I do have is, 20 or 30 sketchbooks, filled full of sketches from the last, 25 years, and all these paintings that I painted either overseas or I got the idea while I was overseas in the military, and I came home and I painted them. So as I look at the paintings and as my friends have them or as I sell them or whatever, they are definite memories of places I've been, particularly the ones that I painted in Seoul, Korea. Those are special paintings to me. There's a series of paintings on my website that you've probably seen them, and they're essentially of neon crosses. And I know there's some folks that have been to Korea. In Seoul's kind of a bowl with the Han River splitting it in half. And on the hills around, or the mountains around Seoul, I think probably before the 1988 Olympics, it would have been more prominent because Seoul changed a lot after that. But the churches spent quite a lot of money investing in these large neon crosses that you can see from standing in the streets of Seoul. So that was an inspiration for me. But so instead of taking a photograph of them, I painted them. And the same with the expatriate series, the graffiti and things like that in the streets of Seoul. So that's kind of how that works. And that's why some of it's near abstract or there's some graffiti in and that type of thing, because it's kind of been my diary. But that was my camera. And I took that from childhood, from sketching and that type of thing. So I think that answers your question.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I enjoyed how you explained. So I've never been to Korea, and the way you talked about in the expatriate series and then the Trojan War series, how you explain one is what it's like during the day and one is when it comes to life at night because no one ever sleeps. And then you had the checkerboard and the binary code and how you explained why you chose to do that. It was almost a photograph only shows you so many dimensions, and your artwork and the way you explained it and knowing the story behind it really brought it to life. And I mean, I couldn't smell what Korea smells like, but there were certain things I thought, wow, if you had said it smells like this, I would have, but the way you described it and with the colors and the abstract and it's fascinating. It's really good. And I like how you described using your art as, instead of using a camera. And I think a lot of different artists, and you were just talking about John Mellencamp, everyone has a different way of kind of expressing it. And you bring a lot of different elements to the expression and the creativity. So how is being an artist and a Marine influenced your worldview?
It's kind of the merging of things. As most people would say, well, being an artist and being a Marine are kind of, opposed. And that's always kind of stumped me. I've known a lot of Marines who played guitar or wrote or drew or something like that. So, and soldiers as well. And I've known a lot of artists who have been in the military. I think what being both helped me with, and there's other folks out there that do both, it kind of, I wasn't surprised at the other side of things, because from people asking me that question, I had always, you know, been able to say, well, I don't really see them opposed. And it kind of helped me in Iraq. I mean, I think it actually helped me see a little bit the Iraqi soldiers' mm-hmm. point of view. I don't know how to explain that, but I think it was from looking at things in a different way and having folks tell me, particularly artists. I mean, Marines and soldiers wouldn't so much say, you know, I don't really see Marines and soldiers as artists. It was artists who would say, yeah, I really can't imagine, you know, being an artist mm-hmm. and being a Marine. It was more from that side than it was from the military mm-hmm. side. I think the military is actually much more understanding of it. But I think it helped me kind of understand how worlds kind of merge, and it's not that surprising. It's probably not the best answer because it's kind of vague, but that's my answer.
No, yeah, it makes sense. Well, when I said earlier, you know, my grandfather was at the time when, in the 60s, if you're a, you know, he went from being a private in the Marine Corps to being a major, and that was when you were commissioned based on, I mean, he would write letters to the newspapers, and he didn't have a college degree.
Right.
So it was a different time. It was a different, but there must have been some creativity because my father had to get it from somewhere. Besides just golf. I know he did more than just golf. I know he did.
I can tell you how the Marine Corps, you know, the service helped me as an artist. That, I mean, there's mm-hmm. definitely a connection there, and it kind of goes, you know, you're somewhere your grandfather, you know, learned how to ride, and you know, that takes discipline. The Marine Corps helped me with that.
Right.
And it took a lot of, you know, the Marine Corps took a lot of grit, just like the Army takes a lot of grit. I mean, if you
mm-hmm.
go to Ranger School, I guarantee you've got some grit.
Right.
And it all the service also taught me and I know you've heard this term, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You know, I learned that idea in the service and not to, you know, so much worry about things way down the road, like, you know, finding a publisher and that type of thing. Just do first things first. And I learned that in the military.
That makes sense. Well, so what is, you've shared this a little bit, was there something specific, a time that you can remember that compelled you to write your book when you said, that's it, I'm going to write a book and this is what it's going to be about? Or was it more of a process?
Yeah, so when I came back from Iraq. I had fought in Ramadi. I almost immediately got sent to Korea, which I wasn't thrilled about. So I got sent to Korea, and I was going to have to do something with my time. And, you know, the thoughts of the war were still pretty fresh. And by the way, the war didn't really bother me. And like it has a lot of people. I understand it has bothered people, but it really didn't bother me. Even though we fought in the streets of Ramadi, you know, during some of the worst times in the Iraq War, the winter of 2005 and 2006 and on into the spring. When I got to Korea, I knew I was going to write a book about it. So I sat down and I actually wrote the first chapter, and that was in 2007. And that first chapter, I might have edited it here and there, but it was the same. It took me about 5 or 6 more years to actually figure out what the other 31 chapters were. So I knew I was going to write a book as soon as I came back from the war and went to Korea. It just took a while to get it out. And
Go ahead.
So I will say this. So when I joined the Marine Corps, you know, I joined, and since I was a boy, I wondered what all the fuss about war was about. And, you know, because if you hear men talk about it, you know, it sounds like it's the greatest thing they ever did a lot of times. And, you know, that's how my dad and his friends talked about it. And I was curious. Instinctively, I knew after I came back from Iraq that I had answered the question. But it just took a long time to figure out how to articulate that. So it took from 2007 when I wrote the first chapter to 2000, I can't remember till I was done with it. I mean, I think I was finally done with it in 2015. So you're talking quite a few years, but I didn't really start writing the book until 2012. But 2007 was the first chapter.
That's a long time. A lot of pondering and thinking and trying to get it together. So we need to take a quick break.
That's the writing process.
Okay. Well, when we come back, wanted to find out about the characters in your book.
Okay.
Listeners, you can connect with David by going to his website, which is a fascinating website, and you'll see some great art at www.dfordaviderichardson.com. And you can purchase his book from Amazon, War Story, David Richardson.
Listeners, be sure to stay tuned. We'll hear more about War Story with our guest, Lieutenant Colonel David Richardson, when we return with more Army Wives Talk Radio in just a moment.
Types of VA loans. This is a Money Minute from In Charge Education Foundation and MilitaryMoney.com. The VA guarantees 5 types of home loans, and here's what you need to know about each one. A fixed-rate mortgage is a 15- or 30-year mortgage, where the interest rate never changes and monthly payments remain the same. An adjustable-rate mortgage is a fluid loan where the interest rate increases with the market's rate. The first-year rate is generally a couple percentage points below the market rate. The cap is the upper limit of the interest rate. A VA hybrid adjustable-rate mortgage is fixed for 3 or 5 years and then adjusts 1% annually, with a 5% cap. Short-term home buyers like this loan because of the low rates in the early years. Graduated payment and growing equity mortgages both start with low monthly payments, which gradually increase. A graduated payment mortgage begins to increase in the 6th year, and the growing equity mortgage will gradually increase payments into the principal of the loan for an early loan payoff. This Money Minute is made possible by InCharge Debt Solutions. Visit us online at www.incharge.org.
Information arsenal, ArmyWifeNetwork.com offers military family news and resources, experience and expert blogs, active social media, and much, much more. Visit ArmyWifeNetwork.com. Your interactive empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Lieutenant Colonel David Richardson, author of War Story. And David, before we went to break, you share with us about what compelled you to write the book. So are the characters in the book inspired by people you knew while you served in the war? I was checking out, stuff, and you have a Marine, and then you have someone from the Iraqi Defense Forces. So are they based off of, people that you were around or anything?
Full disclosure, the book's about 80% autobiographical. But also, that's kind of typical for a first novel. A lot of it were people I knew. I even use a few names. I think it says in the front of the book, all the names have been changed. Well, that's not completely true. I changed most of them. But some of them, I just didn't have to go – a chance to go back and edit, a name or I just liked it as it was. So yes, I knew a lot of the people, and, some of them I had to make up, because, the storyline, none of us live a life that really fits a storyline. So when you're going to write a novel, you've got to create, there's kind of a formula for creating a storyline. And, I had to do that. And because of that, I couldn't just take a memoir and say, well, that's a story. So I had to make up some things to create some drama, to create tension in the storyline. So yeah, some of the characters I knew.
So how does this book stand apart from other war novels? Because it seems you go through, and I know just looking here at the website and then at Amazon, and of course, it says leads you to all these other books. So there's so many different war story type books. What makes yours stand out?
Because I tell part of the story from the Iraqi soldier's point of view, which is interesting. The gentleman I served with, or the officer I served with, who I advised in Iraq, or my team advised, he was a lieutenant colonel. I was a major at the time. And he told me a lot about his life before, you know, the 2003 invasion. And I included quite a bit of that in there. He also told me about what his hopes and dreams for his life in Iraq, you know, post the war was like. And I kind of had to make – that's the part I had to make up, what happened to him after I knew him. I don't really know, but I know what he told me he wanted to do. So I think that makes it unique. I think another thing that makes it unique is I don't take the character to war until about halfway through the novel. I do some character building of Major Clay Steer Fourth and then Lieutenant Colonel Abdul Majid. I build those characters and then I take them to war. And I think that's because they're both men that are over 35. So I wanted the reader to get to know them as men before they went into combat. So that's different and well. But I think probably the most unique part is the art piece. There's quite a bit about the Washington, D.C. art world in there, and some of it's kind of slimy, I will tell you. So that I think that's kind of an intriguing part for people. I've had many different types of people read the book. I find that women generally like that part of the book a lot, and then they like, you know, the second half of the book. Guys are like, yeah, you know, so I got past all the art stuff, and I got to the war part. But it all fits together. So I think those are the things that make it unique or stand out.
Yeah, it sounds like it with, you know, that, like you said, the art piece or just building the character. These guys are in their 30s, mid-30s, so kind of a different viewpoint versus the young guy going off to war kind of story. But what do you think was the hardest part of writing this book?
Besides, you know, having to do draft after draft after draft, because I wrote the thing on Microsoft Office, and then, you know, and keeping the language clean, you know, you know, deciding whether it was a memoir versus a novel and creating a plot line. It was actually, you know, making sure the tie between art and war was essentially the seam was smooth, you know, and not, you know, I had to make that tie between art and war. It took me a long time to think that out. You know, once again, the story asked the question, why is man fascinated by war? And I had this character who was a painter and a soldier. So I answered it by using, you know, both of those pursuits of his. And I know that mankind is fascinated by war. So I knew there was a tie there. It just took me a long time and a lot of hard thinking to articulate that in a manner that essentially you would find both entertaining and enlightening. One of the things I liked about writing the novel is, you know, I never actually asked that question in the novel. It's implied, and then the answer is implied, but it's pretty clear if you read it, understanding that, you know, the novel has a purpose. So working that piece out was difficult, and it took me a lot of grit to get that done. But I think I did it satisfactorily. I had a guy from Real Clear Defense write an article on it this weekend, and he had a very high opinion of it, and he is familiar with both the art world and the military. So I think I did it successfully, and I'm glad I spent the sweat equity and grit doing that. So that was definitely the hardest part, tying art world and the military together.
So, David, who are your military, artistic, or literary heroes?
Hero, I don't expect everybody to have, you know, delved into the word hero.
Sure.
Hero has a pretty specific definition, and you, as Army mm-hmm. Wives on Army Wives Radio, would be attuned to the definition of hero is somebody you pay in advance.
Right.
To do something that essentially may end their life, but you pay them in advance, and they and they train for it, and then they go out and do it. It has nothing to do with sports. It has nothing to do with Hollywood. It is specific to essentially what Marines, sailors, soldiers, airmen, and Coast Guard people do, and what first responders do. And that's pretty much where it's limited to. So that's the definition of hero is one thing. And I do have a literary hero, and there's a genre of writing called the Golden Fleece, which is essentially what my book is. A man in search of the answer to something, and he brings it home and he tells his fellow man. That's the Golden Fleece. And the giveaway, one of those stories, is The Odyssey. And since I've been in college, I was fascinated by Odysseus. And Odysseus is my literary hero. And I just love the character. He's the trickster. He's got a lot of grit. He'll do a few wrong things to get his way, but I really like him, and he's kind of my hero.
Okay. I was thinking, so a book like The Alchemist, even one of those books that I haven't read The Odyssey in years, but he was a trickster. And looking at your art, it's and then listening to you tonight. That really makes sense, and I totally agree with what you were saying about heroes and how that word is defined. Do you have, as someone who's, it sounds like you love to be creative, do you have any more books planned? Are you still painting, or how are you using your creative outlet now?
Well, I am writing another book. And it's going to be about the character. He comes home, and 10 years later, things happen, and he's out of the military.
Okay.
So yes, I'm writing another book, and this won't take me as long because I know how to write a novel now, and I didn't when I started before.
Sure.
And I'm actually painting. I'll probably have a show here in D.C. Next fall. I'm not sure where I'm going to have it. So I'm always painting something, and I'm looking forward to showing the work. I'm actually painting flowers. Which is what my mother's genre was, and I'm kind of doing some of the things she did. They're in very large format, like 4 foot by 4 foot. So, yes, I'm painting and writing still.
That's great. So, where can our listeners go to learn more about you and your work? Your website, I'm guessing, and then. But you said you might have something in the fall in D.C. Would your website have all that information?
Yeah, so I put that information on my website, and when I do have a show in Washington, D.C., it'll be posted there a couple months ahead of time. So you can go to the website, right? As you mentioned before, you can order the book at Amazon.com. There's some articles out there that are pretty interesting, particularly one from Real Clear Defense. Just Google David Richardson, war story, and those things come up. So that's how you can find it.
Is your stuff in a gallery at this time?
I don't right now. I had some stuff in New York, but I don't right now, no.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
David, thank you for joining us this evening. Really, really appreciated having you on tonight.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Well, tonight's show was brought to you by our AWTR show sponsor, One Natural Way. One Natural Way has helped thousands of military families throughout their breastfeeding journey. See how they can help you by visiting www.onenaturalway.com to get started today.
Listeners, thanks so much for being with us tonight. Be sure to tune in next week, Monday, May 20th, 2019, for our interview with Jessica Strong, who will share with us the results of the 2018 Blue Star Families Military Lifestyle Survey. It's going to be another great show. You don't want to miss it.
In the meantime, join us on www.armywifenetwork.com to stay connected to resources, information, expert columnists, and share the journey with many of our experienced contributors, or follow along on any of our social media outlets, such as Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
We are your interactive empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives. This is Army Wife Network's core team signing out.
Thank you for tuning into Army Wife Talk Radio. The views and opinions expressed in our show are personal. Army Wife Talk Radio is in no way affiliated with the Department of Defense or any other branch of the armed services. And inclusion in our show does not reflect endorsement by the DoD, any local government, or their agencies. Until the next episode, head over to ArmyWifeNetwork.com. Your interactive empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives.